There are things out there. Creatures, monsters, ghouls, and spirits. Beings that fall outside the realm of visible truth, beyond the confines of our basic reality. They lurk in the dark, haunt the recesses of our minds, and stir our curiosity in the unusual and weird. They are taboo topics, stories that we tell around the campfire and folklore passed down from our ancestors. We've been taught that these things don't exist, that they are merely myth and legend. Or are they? Welcome to the Occult Archives. I'm your host and spooky librarian, E.M. Moon, but feel free to refer to me as E. Here lies a space beyond all spaces, a library full of arcane information enough to drive any normal person mad. If you can think of it, if you can question it, the archives probably have what you seek. Tonight's episode is part two of issue number two of 667, which was the last episode we did. So if you haven't listened to that, I would recommend going back to the previous episode. I guess, was that nine? I think so. And listen to that before you give this one a listen. Violent Eve. Vi, you're home! Missy stood to greet me when I walked through the front door. Jeremy was gone, but had been replaced by half a dozen scantily clad women. Yes, was all I could reply. I was still a bit shaken after my escape from the salon and desperately wanted to clear my head. So, we're going to a big party tonight that Jeremy is throwing for us. Missy leapt up off the sofa and came to jump in front of me. Great, I feigned excitement, but I'm sure I fell flat. Wear something sexy, Missy winked, looking down at my tattered shorts and shirt. I don't really have anything fancy or sexy, for that matter, I admitted. I had cut down over half my wardrobe, but had never been one to dress sexy, as Missy put it. Take my card, buy whatever you want. Jeremy said that whatever you need, he's got you. Missy fished around in her purse before handing me a Centurion Black card. I don't even know where to go. I obviously didn't know the area and didn't want to go out alone. Not after what had just happened. I'll call a car to take you a few places. Get a dress, some shoes, accessories, whatever. Then you can come back here and get your hair and makeup done by Nika. She's fantastic. Missy gestured to a very flaxen-haired woman that was rolling a trolley of makeup into the living room. Let me go freshen up real quick. I just needed a moment before heading back out again. You do that and I will call the car around. Missy patted my backside as I headed to my bedroom. I was in there long enough to wash my face and hands, pull my hair into a ponytail, and change my shoes from combat boots to sneakers before Missy was yelling at me about the car. I trudged out of the room and waved goodbye to her as I climbed into Jeremy's chauffeured Mercedes and sped off towards some expensive shopping. The first three shops were a bust. The employees were rude and stuck up, not the sort of place I wanted to purchase clothing from. Besides, all of it was hideously gaudy, with neon colors and animal prints that made my stomach churn. I made the car wait for me as I wandered up and down the streets in the area, trying to find a store that suited my sensibilities. The driver had told me that I needed to be back at the car by 4, but it was already 3. I needed to find something, and quick. A little shop with a hand-painted sign caught my attention. The scent of sandalwood and flute music lingered in the air as I almost passed it by. The Rabbit Hole. I spoke the name aloud as I stepped over the threshold and into a haven for weirdos like me. Everything was draped in lush velvets and dragon tapestries, with novelty knick-knacks and racks of hand-sewn clothing. Hello, Alice. Is there something I can help you find? The Queen of Hearts, perhaps? Or maybe the White Rabbit? A woman with hot pink pixie cut greeted me from behind the counter. Hi, I'm actually looking for a whole outfit for some fancy party tonight. My friend and I are going out for our birthday. I stopped to check out a rack of jewel-toned corsets. Well, happy early birthday. She smiled and stopped for a second to scan the outfit I wore. I take it you aren't a silk and chiffon type of person. No long fancy dresses, but nothing too short either. Maybe in purple? She came around the counter and meandered through the racks that were all color-coded. I love purple. I smiled as I followed her through the shop. Let me see. I have just the dress in mind. The pink pixie sorted through the rack before finally snagging a piece to hold out and show me. It was gorgeous. The fabric was soft and flowy in a print that looked very much like a swirling violet galaxy. The hemline was high in the front as it cascaded longer down the back. The sleeves were capped and the back had sheer lace corseting. "That's just perfect," I exclaimed, bringing my hand to my mouth. "I figured you'd like it. Try it on." She hung the dress from my fingers. "You said you needed shoes, too. A necklace, maybe?" I followed her back to the heavily curtain-changing stalls. "All of the above. I was told to get whatever I wanted." I thought about how fun it might actually be to dress up for once. "Oh, yes. Since it is your birthday, and she told you to get whatever you want, I'm going to create you an absolutely killer outfit. How old are you going to be?" She brushed the curtain back for me to step inside one of the changing rooms. 30. I hated saying it out loud. 30. It was all downhill from here, or at least it felt that way. "You're older than me? No way." She didn't believe me. "I just turned 28 in April. "Yep. 30. Tomorrow." I nodded, sliding the curtain back. 30. Tomorrow. I didn't look my age, but I was starting to feel it. I was going to be 30 with nothing to show for it but a few self-published books that made me a minor amount of money and a stupid blog that no one followed. I had not met my goal of becoming a heavy-hitting fiction writer like I'd planned. I slipped the dress on and checked myself out in the mirror. It surprisingly lay well on my shortened frame, but I would definitely need some sort of heel to make my legs look longer. They were so stumpy. "What's your shoe size?" I heard Pink Pixie ask through the curtain. 6? I think that was the right conversion for U.S. sizes. I heard her pat off and went back to admiring myself in the mirror. I felt like maybe I needed a new bra and a necklace or something to finish it all off. But other than that, I actually liked the way I looked for once. My eyes fell on my slicked hair that now hung over my shoulder. I wasn't sure how I felt about it straight. I kind of liked my unruly curls. Maybe I'd have Mika curl my hair when I got back, but even then it needed something to completely tie it all together. A crown, a headband of crystals and hues of the night sky. If I had had the time and prior notice, I could have possibly found the stuff to make one, but now it was too late. It'd be nice if the rabbit hole had something like that. Doubtful. "Come out here and try these shoes on. I think they'll be perfect," Pixie called out to me as I slipped through the curtain. She handed me a pair of calf-high velvet boots with a rather large wedge platform. "Almost 5 inches," Pixie pointed out the height as I slipped my sneakers off and laced up the boots. "Wow, I'm impressed by myself." I caught a glimpse of my figure in a full-length mirror. "It's perfect on you. I thought this necklace would go well with it." Pixie handed me a choker made out of velvet ribbon with a singular silver moon dangling in the middle. Now if she only had that crown I dreamed up. "I'll take all of it." I tugged my boots off and pulled the dress up over my head. I hadn't even bothered to take my clothes off before trying it on. Pixie folded the dress and snagged the shoes before carrying them back to the counter. I stuffed my feet back in their sneakers and shouldered my bag. I did want to see if she had any cute accessories that I could wear in my hair. The shocking ginger color left the whole ensemble too open for me. "I want to wear something in my hair as a sort of finishing touch. Do you happen to have any crowns or cute headbands?" I placed my hands on the counter as Pixie started to ring the dress up. "Oh!" A light bulb went off in her head and she ducked under the counter before she slid the door back on the glass case. This would be perfect. Pixie stood up holding a wire-wrapped headband in silver, studded with purple and black crystal points. "Rainbow and lavender aura quartz with onyx?" I breathed in question. The crown looked just like the one I'd put together in my head. I had a fondness for crystals. "I don't remember stocking that, but we get artists who sell their work in here all the time. Maybe someone else set it up for display." Pixie shrugged and went to ring up my shoes as I gazed down at the crown in awe. "I don't care how much it costs. I'll take it." I set the band back on the counter. Pixie finished ringing everything up and slipped it into a black bag before giving me my total. $348.78. She sucked in air through her teeth at the steep total. I was also shocked. I never spent over £50 on anything. I took the black card out of my wallet and handed it over to Pixie. "A black card? What did your friend do for a living?" Pixie eyed me suspiciously for a second. "It's her boyfriend's card. Maybe that was too much information. Did I look dodgy?" "I'll have to call and verify with him." Pixie picked up the phone and dialed the number that was on the back of the card. After chatting with the person on the other end of the line for a few minutes, they must have put her through to Jeremy. "Yes, hi. My name's Angelica, and I work at the Rabbit Hole here in New Orleans. There is a..." Angelica paused and mouthed for my name, so I told her. "Violet Quirk that is using her black card to make a purchase for..." "Oh, you don't care the cost?" "All right. You're most welcome. Bye-bye." Angelica hung up the phone. "Am I in the clear?" I had been nervous there for a second. I didn't want to make Jeremy mad at me. He said to give you whatever you wanted. Angelica winked and reached up to grab a crescent moon-shaped bag off the top wall. She rang that up too before scanning the card. Then she stuffed the receipt in the bag, but paused before she handed it over and the card to me. I'm Pixie, by the way, she smiled, the studs in her cheeks spreading wide. I thought it was Angelica. I smirked. Obviously, Pixie was a nickname, and oddly enough, the one I had given her. That too, and you're Violet. Come back and see us soon, okay? Bye, Alice. She winked at me and passed my bag off. I grinned shyly before exiting the store and made my way down to the car that was thankfully still waiting for me. My new home was a total madhouse when I got back. Missy was running around with a cocktail in her hand, directing some girls to Mika and others to the kitchen for drinks. There was loud talking, even louder music, and a haze of smoke hovered in the air. Missy stumbled over to me drunkenly and handed me a cocktail of my own before shooing me to the bedroom to bathe and get myself dressed. She wanted me to get my hair done soon. I had no idea what to do with my makeup, so I left myself blank and donned my new dress and boots before stuffing what little things I needed into my new moon-shaped bag. When I came out of the room, two girls were standing on the bar in the kitchen, hollering at the top of their lungs as a song blared on the Bluetooth speaker in the living room. Missy was sitting in front of Mika as she curled her bleach blonde hair with a barrel iron. Her makeup and nails were already done. She didn't look like the Missy I knew, but people did change. This new Missy, however, was very different from the one I grew up with. Violet, get over here and get your hair done. Oh my god! Missy jerked in her seat, and Mika had to follow the movement so she didn't burn any hair. Your outfit, where did you get that? Was she impressed with my ensemble? The rabbit hole? I didn't like any of the other places. I scrunched up my nose. Well, this is definitely you. And those shoes make your legs look so long. Missy let Mika finish the last curl and spray her down with hairspray before she got up from her seat and patted it for me. Can you make it look less flat? I asked the hairdresser as Missy flopped over the couch, drinking a martini. Did someone just straighten your hair? Missy asked me, and I murmured with a yes. Well, besides shopping, where did you go today? She was suddenly interested in what I had been doing since I got here last night. Off with the man that found my phone. It's complicated. I closed my eyes, hoping that Missy wouldn't be asking me any more questions. You haven't even been here 24 hours, and you're already getting into trouble. She clucked at me. No trouble, just... New Orleans is a weird city, I replied. That was the best I could do without word vomiting about all the other crap that was going on. You should invite him to the party. Missy winked at me. She didn't care about my personal drama. I don't have his phone number. Besides, I don't think it would work out. I was still very shaken from earlier. Either way, you're the last one to get ready. Let Mika do your makeup real quick and then meet us out front. Jeremy got us a stretch hammer! Missy clapped her hands and leapt up off the sofa. She gathered up all the other women and started steering them to the front door while Mika got to work on my makeup. Why did I have the sinking feeling that something was wrong tonight? Maybe the moon was full, or maybe it was just the city. I just hoped that this birthday celebration didn't end in chaos. Adam Bodine. This is quite possibly the craziest party I have ever done music at. I spoke to Nate as he helped me finish getting my equipment set up. People were lining up outside the gates, waiting to get inside. I know, right? A fucking cemetery? I heard the place isn't even on the map, and you saw what the drive was like out here. Seriously crazy. Nate hooked up my final speaker as I connected everything with the lighting rig that had been provided for me. And what is this party for exactly? I didn't even know what I was doing music for. This dude owns, like, I don't know, 20 gentlemen's clubs in the southeast area. It's his girlfriend's birthday or something. Nate waved his hand in the air. Today? I wondered. Mine was tomorrow, the 6th. I don't know. I think he mentioned something about a special thing he wants to do at midnight for her 30th. Nate looked like he wanted to get over to the bar that stood near a huge mausoleum. Same as me, I muttered. What were the odds? Oh yeah, your birthday is the 6th. Nate had forgotten, as usual. Gotta get to the bar, they're going to let the ghouls in. Nate wiggled his fingers in the air as he backed over to his station. Whoever was controlling the lighting at this party flipped a switch and little pricks of shimmering light started flitting about like tiny ghostly specters. Small fires erupted in urns lining the trails and lit the dirt pathway with an orange glow. The gates opened and I could hear people filing into the cemetery as I started my first track. Most of the women I saw pass by my booth were in shiny vinyl dresses with hair twice as big as their heads. Strippers. They were all strippers. Not to say that they weren't attractive, but the strippers down here had a reputation for getting themselves into drug troubles and drama. Regardless of the company, the check was too good to pass up. Woman after woman stopped by my booth and danced for a minute, drink in hand, before winking at me and wandering off to be with friends. A couple girls even slinked by in furry boots and fuzzy-eared hats with glow sticks around their necks and wrists. Stripper rave. That sounds like there won't be any trouble at all. Then the men started coming in. A lot of college guys and quite a few business types. This made the atmosphere change. Groups of women started flocking to one or two men, usually the ones that I pegged as being wealthy, while a few of the more innocent-looking girls walked around arm in arm with college-looking frat guys. It went on this way for some time. Eventually, a crowd had formed in front of my booth as I laid track after track of popular remix songs and a few of my own. Nate came over about an hour in and bought me a drink. I told him that I was going to need more than that. I felt anxious for some reason, and I knew that alcohol would soothe the worry. I was starting to heat up. That wasn't helping the anxiety either. My hands felt hotter than usual, and I worried that I might melt through the flameproof gloves and destroy my expensive sound equipment. I beckoned for Nate to get me two more shots of vodka and a glass of ice. Make that three glasses of ice. No, a whole goddamn pitcher. Nate wasn't aware of my condition, so I played it off with a lie about the combination of the southern heat and the lights I was standing under. He was pretty much drunk already. The lie worked better than I'd expected. I started a new track, one that I knew didn't have to be messed with for a while, and took the picture out of sight. I tore my gloves off and plunged one scalding hand after the other into the ice. The movement was so quick, yet when I pulled my hands from the picture, they were steaming from the cold, the ice now nothing but water. That quelled the heat a little bit, but the fire still crept through the rest of my body. I pulled my jacket off and tossed it over the chair next to me. I had a few layers on, so I could afford to lose one or two. My hair had been down with my hood up, but now that there was no jacket and I physically felt like I had been dropped in a volcano, I pulled it back from my face and tied it off with a bandana. Naked would have been the best option at this point, but highly inappropriate given the company. I was just getting back to mix my track when a hand fell upon my shoulder. My first reaction was to swing, but the voice that accompanied it made me rethink my actions. "I'm very disappointed in you." "Henri, what the hell are you doing here?" I let the track play as is and turned to my very disgruntled brother. "I tracked you down, called the bar, and they told me that Nate was out with you at a cemetery party. This is sacred ground, Adam, and you're participating in its desecration." Henri's eyes shone red amidst the dancing lights. "I'm just working a job, Henri. Nothing is being destroyed. The cemetery hasn't even been kept up in years." I pointed out that there were crumbling tombs and mausoleums that were scattered about. It hadn't been vandalized or anything, but it was ancient. "That doesn't matter! You all are just adding insult to injury! You were raised better than this, Adam." Henri's nose was scrunched up in frustration. "I did know better. The dead were sacred. I was taught our ancestors were something that we revered. We respected them. They came before us and paved our way. They were part of our ancestry, our blood. But I hadn't known it was going to be at a cemetery. They didn't tell us till we had already driven to the first stop point to get the address to here. I didn't know we were going to a party at a cemetery. It was one of those invitation-only scavenger hunt sort of deals. Exclusive, isolated location full of debauchery and drunkenness. I tried to defend myself. "But you're still here, Adam. You could have declined when you found out. These people have no respect for the dead. Look at them, half naked, having sex on the crypts and leaving their empty cups and used condoms littered about. This is just bad energy for all of us." Henri was a lot angrier than I thought. I had really fucked up. "What do you want me to do? I can't just leave right now. It would be unprofessional and I won't get paid." I was being selfish, but I didn't want to live in Henri's upstairs apartment for the rest of my life. "Then this is on you. You deal with the consequences. I'm not going to stick around here for the aftermath." Henri was really, really disappointed in me. But what did he think was going to happen? "What's going on, Henri?" I had completely forgotten about my set and just let it loop to the next song on the playlist. "Something isn't right. The whole day has been off. Wild energy all about. Jackie told you he felt it. I felt it. Do you not?" Henri wasn't sure why I wasn't picking up on the weird vibes that had been floating around all day. It's not like we had the same DNA. I didn't have the gifts that he did. Though I did feel weird, physically. I was sweltering now, sweat dripping from my face. I had to have a fever, or at least I was getting close to it. These hands weren't normal either, but that had been going on for weeks now. I do feel it. You think this has anything to do with it? I held my gloved hands up for him to see that they were practically steaming. I don't know. I thought it was a curse, but after today, after what happened with your friend Violet, I did some divination. I pulled the devil card, Adam. Henri came closer to me to speak. I glanced out at the crowd in the cemetery. It was much bigger than before. At least people looked like they were plenty satisfied with the music that I had picked. Go on, I urged him. I knew a little bit about tarot, but nothing that pertained to what he was divining for. Some negative outside influence is bearing down on us. It's been a long time coming. I didn't want to get you involved, but others have felt it too, seen it in the bones, read it in the cards, divined it in the stars, and it's been stronger today than any other day. We've seen the signs. Something bad is going to happen. And tonight. Henri looked almost scared, and he was never that. It'll be fine, Henri. If anything is going to happen, it won't be right now. The sky is clear, the weather's nice, nothing bad out here tonight, I assured him, turning back to my computer. That's when I saw her. Amidst the gyrating strippers and flashing rainbow lights, she was standing still next to a disintegrating statue. She stood out from the crowd, dressed completely different from all the other women. Henri may have been feeling the negative energy, but the mere presence of this girl struck a positive chord deep within me. I turned back to see if Henri was still waiting around for me to change my mind, but he was gone. And when I looked back into the dancing crowd, the woman that had captured my attention was gone too. Violet Eve. It was dark by the time we left, and Missy still hadn't told me where it was that we were going. She kept saying that it was Jeremy's surprise. The other girls in the limo were beyond rowdy the whole ride to wherever the hell it was that we were going. A winding road led us just out of the city and into the countryside, where it twisted around through cypress trees dripping with Spanish moss and culminated in old wrought iron gates. A cemetery. Happy birthday to me. Despite the events of the day, this was a pleasant surprise. Maybe not for your average normal human being, but there was something so peaceful and yet exciting about being amidst the dead. I had visited many a historic and ancient cemetery in Ireland and the surrounding area, but I had never seen a cemetery like this. All of the graves were in above-ground mausoleums and crypts because of the flooding in the area and the swampy marshlands. No one was buried underground here. A cemetery? I breathed as the limo pulled up to the gates and I tried to desperately peer out the window to see where we were. Missy noticed my interest among the girls chattering and passing around glasses of champagne. She hit the button for the sunroof and I was able to straddle the seat and poke my head through. I could hear music and see lights waving in the air as they illuminated the darkened night around the gates. We were fashionably late, as Missy called it, and everyone else seemed like they were already within the cemetery, partying like it would be their last night on Earth. Surprised? Missy tugged at my dress and pulled me back down into the limo. You knew? She had apparently known all along. She wanted me to be surprised. Of course I knew. It was my idea. Jeremy just organized it all. I remembered how much she used to love trekking out to the family plots to do gravestone rubbings and have picnics. I knew you'd love it. Missy smiled at me. There she was, my old Missy, the best friend that I spent my childhood and beyond with. Thanks, Miss. I tried not to tear up. As hard as things had been, she always knew how to make them just a little bit better. Enough chit-chat. We have a birthday to celebrate. Missy held her glass in the air and everyone clanged their own against hers. Doors started to open and we all filed out to the gates. A bouncer, the one from the Cat's Meow, greeted us at the front and gladly led us inside. I had never seen so many scantily clad women in my life. There were at least three to a man, all past the point of inebriation, as they screamed in excitement when they saw Missy. She was quite popular, it seemed. All of her other friends flocked to her side and began talking at once about the party, their outfits, the drinks. I lost interest. That little glimpse of the old Missy was gone. Maybe I needed a drink. I still wasn't feeling like myself, even if I looked good or not. I spotted a bar that had been set up over near a crypt with the name Willis chiseled into the top, and bumped my way through the crowd that was dancing in front of the DJ booth. I thought the music was quite good, despite my anxiety over the night. Double shot of Jameson, please. I laid my hand out on the top of the glittering bar and waited for the bartender to turn around. He was bobbing his head, engrossed in the music, when he turned to face me. Violet? He exclaimed as he turned around with two shot glasses of whiskey. It was Nate. Nate? I was just as surprised to see him here myself. Look at you! Haven't even been in the city 24 hours and you're already attending exclusive secret parties. Nate set my shot glasses down and I took one right after the other. Yeah, I breathed, holding up two fingers for another sip. How did you manage that one? Nate poured two more and passed them to me. It's my birthday party, sort of. I went to take the shot when Nate stopped me and filled the two glasses all the way to the rim. This is your party? You aren't Mr. Beaumont's girlfriend, are you? Nate posted up on the bar, prepared to grill me for information. No, my best friend is. We just have the same birthdays. I downed my other two shots. So, your birthday's today? Nate glanced over the DJ booth and back at me. Tomorrow. All of this was a surprise to me. I slid the empty glasses back over to him. Before he could say anything else, an older man sidled up next to me and ordered a gin on the rocks. Ah, Violet. It was Jeremy. I knew he'd be here, but I had hoped that I could avoid him. There was just something about him that was unsettling to me. While I appreciated the party, I didn't really want to sit and chat. Hello, Jeremy. I forced a smile and tapped on the bar for another shot. Nate brought it to me, but before I could take it, Jeremy had his own drink and started to lead me away from the bar. What do you think of the party? Missy mentioned that you were fond of cemeteries. Jeremy led me over to a quiet spot near a plot flanked by two angels. If you could call anything quiet around here. I am. There are a lot of beautifully haunting ones back home. This one is incredible, though. I've never seen a cemetery in Ireland with plots like these. I was actually carrying on a conversation with him unintentionally, but I like to talk about weird things with just about anyone. This is Beaumont Cemetery, sitting on what used to be Beaumont Plantation, my family's original home here in Louisiana. Jeremy smirked at me. I could see why Missy was attracted to him. The accent was just a bonus. Well, it's beautiful. I've always been interested in the past. Who we were, how we advanced, what brought us to where we are today. It's part of the reason I became a writer. I was talking about myself. This felt weird. Missy mentioned that you were an author with a few books published already. Do you do well? Jeremy was talking business with me like I was someone important. Oh, I'm hardly an author. I have a few books in my Ghost Prophecy series, self-published online. I make mediocre money at best. I'm hoping I'll find better work around here. I nodded, wishing I had another drink in my hand. A woman passed me by with a tray of mimosas, so I snatched one up and began sipping. Well, you could always work for me. Missy makes plenty of money to live comfortably and then some. Jeremy leaned into me as he finished his gin. You know, I have no idea what it is that you do. Missy never told me. She hadn't. Ever. Why was that just now striking me as odd?
An entrepreneur, an investor, a manager, amongst other things. I own and operate over 20 gentlemen's clubs in the southeast area. We also run a few burlesque shows and several nightclubs.
He entailed to me what he did for a living. Missy told me she had been dancing. She had come over here to the States on a scholarship for dance, but school hadn't worked out. She told me she was employed with a company and was making tons of money. As a stripper. This wasn't Missy. Missy had never been one to use her body to get what she wanted, but she didn't seem like the girl I had known for all those years in Belfast. Exotic dancing was a lucrative profession, but not one for her. What had happened to Missy over here? You want me to work for you doing what? If he said stripping, I was going to bash him over the head with the plastic cocktail glass in my hand. Well, you have something I haven't seen in my girls. Natural hair, natural body, innocent face. You'd make a killing. And your style is so unique. I think you could draw all new clientele. Jeremy's smile widened as he sized me up in the strobe light. What the fuck? Stripping wasn't my cup of tea. Getting naked around anyone wasn't either. Who the hell did he think he was asking me to become one of his dancers when he hardly knew me? I told him I was a writer, a very introverted, awkward as fuck writer. I'm good. I wanted to tear him a new arsehole, but I couldn't find the words. This was not what I had expected, nor planned. I came here to start a new life, not become a stripper and get wrapped up in whatever Missy was in. I realized in the limo ride over that she had become quite a fan of a drug that had the same name as a certain carbonated beverage. Think about it, won't you? I'm sure it isn't what you want to be doing right now, but you could take all that money you make and invest it in your books. Jeremy chewed on a partially melted ice cube. I don't think I'll ever be interested, but thank you for the offer. I was polite, but hoped that I had made myself clear.
Too bad. Enjoy yourself, but be back here at midnight.
I have something planned for the birthday hour. Jeremy winked and bowed out of our conversation. I breathed a shaky sigh of relief as he left me alone with the rest of the partygoers. What just happened? Here I am wandering around this new city with some naive expectations as to what my new life was going to be like. Instead, things were vastly different. I strolled over to a crumbling statue, weather-worn and lichen-covered, and paused as I continued to think about everything. On my first night here, I had almost been sexually assaulted and possibly killed. Missy had been all flippant and nonplussed by the goings-on around her. That orb had shown me some terrifying things. Jeremy propositioned me to dance naked for his company, and then there was Adam. There was already enough on my plate, and I didn't need this. I hadn't realized that I had been staring into the blinding lights of the DJ booth, the music reverberating around me as people seemed to dance in slow motion. My chest felt tight and my arms started to tingle as I took in heavy breaths, but never felt like I was getting enough oxygen. I was starting to have a panic attack. There was no way I could calm down here amidst the chaos, so I decided a late-night cemetery stroll would do me good. I didn't even know what time it was, but I didn't care. I needed to get the hell away from all the crap that had just surfaced. The path I was on led around the back of the cemetery, since the festivities seemed to be centered at the front of the graveyard. This direction would have fewer people to make me panic more or get in my way. I clutched at my chest as I hobbled down the dirt path in a direction unknown. I found myself in the far back of the cemetery. The music was but an echo back here, and the lack of artificial lighting made it possible to view a heaven smattered with a trillion stars. This was what I did when I was upset or anxiety reared its ugly head. I'd take to nature to heal me, to calm me down. Mom had always been a very spiritual person who was connected to the earth, and she had passed that trait on to me. Nature and times before our own featured heavily in my writing, but none of the content that was published. I wrote paranormal romances and historical fiction with a paranormal twist, but I wanted to branch out. New Orleans was supposed to help me finish up Ghost Prophecies, which was new adult fiction, and then finally branch out to adult urban fantasy and adult romance. Just fiction for adults. I was going to be 30 after all. What the fuck am I doing with my life? I scolded myself aloud as I sat down on a rough stone bench, my hands still over my heart. This wasn't what I had in mind for my birthday either. I loved the atmosphere of being surrounded by those that had lived before me, but I wasn't a live people person. To say that I was shy or quiet was an understatement. I was a full-blown introvert. Life just worked better for me that way. I wanted to be home. Real home, with a hot cuppa and a good book, playing the classics on the radio as I silently rang in my 30s. Just another night alone. But here I sat, dressed up far nicer than I had ever been in my life, alone on my soon-to-be 30th birthday. I got the alone part right, at least. I was a sad creature. I could feel it deep inside me. I had done nothing with my life, nothing to show for the good woman my mother tried to raise me to be. All by herself, I might add. I had dropped out of school, decided that I wanted to be a writer, and spent the better part of my later 20s working menial jobs with no benefits while I struggled to be the author that I so desperately wanted to become. I not only wasted good years of my own life, but my mother's too. I tried to take care of her, tried to keep her from them. I had thought she was paranoid at first, but some things just didn't make sense. My time was so preoccupied with a fantasy world that I forgot about reality and let my own mother die because of my carelessness. I deserved to be alone on this milestone. It was my punishment for the poor decisions that I had made. When the clock chimed midnight, I wouldn't be any different than I was at this moment. Still a fucking loser, doing nothing with my life. Adam Bodine. Did you see her? Nate ran over to my booth and tapped on the table. See who? I had just put my headphones on after Henri had made his abrupt exit and was trying to get back to my set. Violet, she's here! Nate looked excited. Wait, Violet is at this party? From what I knew of her, that seemed highly unlikely. Her best friend is the birthday girl. Well, they both are. Nate relayed to me what he knew. Her birthday is today? I was a bit baffled by what Nate was saying to me. No, tomorrow, the same day as yours. Nate shook his head. She had a June 6th birthday too? What were the odds? Where did she go? I asked. I needed to talk to her. I had never been able to find her earlier today, and I needed to apologize. Mr. Beaumont took her off to talk, but I didn't see where to.
She had this purple starry print dress on and big platform boots. You can't miss her. Nate described what Violet was wearing. I hadn't missed her. I had just seen her standing by the statue. I was gonna say something earlier, but it looked like you were talking to Henri. Now it was Nate's turn to seem confused. Yeah, he was chastising me for desecrating sacred ground. I set up a new playlist to loop and took off my headphones. It's a cemetery. Nate didn't understand Henri when it came to this side of things. But he's right. If it wasn't for the money, I would have left. I came around the side of the table and scanned the area for any sign of Violet, but all I saw was a boatload of strippers and men who were enjoying their company. She was over in that area. Nate pointed to a specific crypt. Downwind of that was the statue. Maybe she had gone down that row of tombs. Keep an eye on my booth. I need to go find her, I instructed Nate. He knew a little bit about what had happened this morning, so he knew how important it was for me to talk to her. Do what you have to. I'll cover the music. Nate nodded as I ran off in the direction I figured Violet had gone. I found her all the way in the back of the cemetery, alone, sitting on a memorial bench. Violet's head was hung low, her hair shrouding her face. From the looks of her defeated posture and shaking shoulders, she was crying. Violet? I didn't want to scare her, but even for my size, I was known for being fairly stealthy. Her head shot up, and she wiped away the makeup that was running down her cheeks. Adam? She wasn't expecting to see me either. Are you okay? I was cautious with her. Didn't want her running away like a frightened animal again. I'm fine. Peachy. Fucking fantastic. Her words were slurred slightly. She'd been drinking. The birthday girl shouldn't be this sad on her special day. I tried to make light of the situation as I sat down beside her. 30. Only 30, and I haven't done a goddamn thing with my life. She was drunk, but her thoughts were still clear. What do you mean? You're here in New Orleans, living your life, trying to move on from things you'd rather leave behind. You're doing pretty well, I assured her. She just looked at me like I was crazy. Apparently, she didn't believe a word I said. You said you were going to be 30? I steered the conversation somewhere else. Yeah, tomorrow. Violet bit her lower lip, looking like she was trying her hardest to fight back tears in her drunken state. Me too. What were the odds that she and I had the same birthday and were turning the same age? Maybe that's why I was drawn to her. Henri was better with all that astrological stuff, but I knew a little. Really? Violet tried to sober herself up as she shakily withdrew a cigarette from her moon-shaped purse. She offered me one and I accepted. Yep, 30 at midnight or something like that. I'm not even sure the exact time. I shrugged, lighting my own cigarette. What are the odds? Violet leaned back on the bench and stared up at the sky. Slim to none, I replied and looked up to stargaze with her. Do you believe in God, Adam? Violet uttered out of nowhere. Not biblically, per se, but I do believe there is some form of higher power, whatever it is. I responded, scooting closer to her when I noticed her shivering. It wasn't cold by any stretch of the imagination, but I was just the man to warm up anyone who was a bit chilly. That's how I feel. Like, this God that they all talk about. If all of that is real, seems kind of cruel to me to doom the creatures that it so lovingly and painstakingly created to hellfire, all because they don't follow its rules. Humans are too complex to just take orders and follow blindly. Yet we do. And to what end? Your government is rife with so-called believers that are ready to condemn anything that their God tells them is bad based on a book that may or may not have been written by their higher power. Violet just word vomited. This milestone really had her mind going. Gay marriage is legal now. Score one for the United States. I think I'm having a midlife crisis. Violet slapped her hand to her forehead, causing the crystal crown on her head to slump forward. You're not even 30 yet. Slow down. You have plenty of time. I assured her, but she wasn't so sure herself. I was supposed to be a best-selling author by now, and instead I'm getting propositioned by my best friend's boyfriend to be a stripper for his company. Violet scrunched up her nose and took a long drag. Seriously? What did you say? I asked. That was forward of a man she barely knew. No. Fuck no, but nicer. Missy ran off when we first got here, and I figured I would just spend the rest of the evening alone and wait out the big 3-0 all by myself. Violet turned herself away from me slightly. That may have been my hint to go.
I noticed a morning glory flower creeping up the side of the bench and picked it from its vine before leaving her to herself. "Happy birthday, Violet. If you decide that you don't want to be alone for the whole night, come find me." I went to hand her the flower when she looked up from her lap. "I don't need you to keep running after me, Adam. I don't need saving." She didn't even budge to take the flower from me. Something in me snapped, and I flung the flower down on the bench and stormed off back to the party. I didn't need to be so concerned with a stranger anyway, especially not now. The heat from my hands was creeping up my arms, and I noticed that the charred parts of my flesh had now begun to peek out from the cuff of my gloves. My not catching fire was more important than trying to save someone that didn't need a knight in shining armor anymore. Violet Eve. I hadn't meant to be so mean to him, but I didn't need anyone taking care of me, or even trying to. As positive as I tried to be, I was pessimistic about tonight and this whole birthday thing. I wanted to get the fuck out of here, but I had to wait because the limo driver was the only one that could get me home. I got up from the bench and picked up the morning glory. Such a beautiful flower with a color that matched my name. I loved flowers. Mum had too. We had a garden for a while where we grew all sorts of things. All of that died when she did. I hadn't even bothered to check the time. I knew Jeremy had said midnight, but I didn't really care. Missy wouldn't miss me then if she wasn't already. I started running one hand down the crypts while I twirled the flower between the fingers of the other. Calm and quiet. That's what I wanted, and that's what I was getting right now. I stopped at a particularly grand mausoleum to see the name Beaumont carved out in large stone letters. Maybe I should pay my respects. I looked down at the flower between my fingers and bent down to place it in front of the grave, with other long withered bouquets and candle wax. I didn't notice the music anymore, or even the lights flashing on the other side of the cemetery. I also didn't notice the fog that had rolled in. It was light at first, a fine mist that laid low to the ground. Slowly it crept in thicker and started to envelop everything. I couldn't even see my own hand in front of my face as it slithered through me. What the hell? I spun in a circle, trying to figure out which way I had been originally standing. The fog cleared almost as quickly as it had begun. I spun back around to face the crypt, when everything inside me just seized up. Every joint in my body was locked in place, every muscle rigid. I felt as if the sinew would snap at any moment if I went to move. Was this another panic attack? Had the fog somehow brought one on for no reason? Then I felt it, like a tiny atom bomb went off in my gut. It felt like someone had shot me, but the pain multiplied as millions of other explosions went off inside my body. It felt like my cells were ripping themselves apart one by one as the tension in my muscles released and my joints allowed me to fall over on my face. Then the screaming started. I could feel something visceral tearing through my DNA, multiplying at such a rapid rate that I thought I would explode. I recognized this feeling, this agonizing rearrangement of my cells at a molecular level. I had seen this all before, when Henri had handed me the diviner. Was I dying? If I was, why? I just kept screaming, clawing at my face and body as I felt it morph underneath my touch. A primal roar escaped my lips, as it felt like every bone in my body shattered into a million pieces, my nerves on fire from the excruciating pain that was pressing against my person. Death had to be the only option in this. My skin began to crawl, and I felt like my eyeballs were melting in their sockets. I was now hyperventilating as I struggled to not lose consciousness. The searing sensation in my eye sockets had subsided, but I was now blind. Everything around me was dark, and all I could hear was the distant screams where the party had just been going full force. Help me. Please. I called out to no one as I felt one last agonizing pop within my body before I passed out from the pain. Adam Bodine. I went back to spinning my set, but not before someone handed a microphone to the man who organized the party. "Excuse me, can I get everyone's attention?" He cleared his throat and the crowd ceased their noise as I paused my music. "My name is Jeremy Beaumont, and I just wanted to thank everyone for coming out to Missy and Violet's 30th birthday bash." The crowd erupted in hoots and hollers, accompanied by applause. "It's almost midnight, and when the clock strikes 12, these two beautiful ladies will enter a new decade of their lives, and I want to ring it in with a big surprise." The crowd got excited all over again. I hadn't seen Violet. She never came back. Her party was just going to go on without her. A woman, who I could only assume was Missy, strode up and wrapped her long, tan arms around Mr. Beaumont's waist. He smiled down at her, still holding the mic in the other hand. I watched him signal to someone I couldn't see as he pressed the microphone back against his lips. 10, 9, 8, he started to count down. I checked my watch, and it was indeed almost midnight. 7, 6, 5, the crowd had joined in with him, and Missy was jumping up and down with excitement. 4, 3, 2, it was almost midnight. What sort of surprise did he have planned for the girls?
1.
The number echoed in my head. Everything seemed to pause around me as a lazy fog crept into the cemetery from the gates. It was low at first, but as it billowed in, it began to thicken. People were murmuring as they watched the mist roll by, but Mr. Beaumont just stood there silently, his arm wrapped around Missy's waist. Her eyes were lit up with anticipation as the fog trailed over the partygoers. It made its way to her and began winding around her body like some ethereal shroud. "We need to go, Adam." Henri snatched me by the arm and pulled me back from the booth. "What the hell, dude?" I snapped out of surprise. "I already have Nate in the car. This fog, this is what we've been seeing in the visions. It's starting." Henri pulled me further back. I watched as the mist had woven itself fully around Missy and was now settling from her body. Her smile quickly faded and she started to gag, choking on nothing but the air around her. "Now, Adam, we have to go now," Henri urged me. I watched the fog slither its way down the path. It was as if it had a mind of its own. "Violet's here. I have to go find her." Suddenly, I wanted to save her again. That anger I had harbored didn't last long. "Where is she?" Henri's eyes were wide as he stared over my shoulder. "In the back of the cemetery." I handed my laptop over to him. I needed that, at least, if I had to leave everything else behind. I knew better than to question Henri's foresight. "Go around the other side and steer clear of that fog. It brings something terrible with it." Henri took my computer and ran off towards the exit as I heard a scream behind me. Missy was now seizing on the ground, and the people around her were panicking as something clearly painful took over their bodies. Jeremy didn't do anything to help anyone and just watched, still as a statue, as others began to cough and sputter, not able to help her or themselves. As much as I felt for them, I had to find Violet before the fog reached her too. "Violet!" I bellowed, kicking dirt up behind me as I flew down the path I had taken earlier to find her. I was soaked from head to toe in sweat as my body rose well over a safe temperature, but I had no time to stop and cool down. "Violet!" I screamed again as soon as I came to the spot where I had left her. She wasn't there. This place was more of a maze than I thought. If she had gone down one of the many paths that were in front of me, the fog could have easily gotten to her already. Then I heard a scream in the distance, and then another, but they weren't coming from Violet's direction. That one was Violet. I sprinted off in the direction of her pained screams, but before I got to her, they had stopped.
"Help me. Please."
I heard a hushed voice on the other side of a metal fence that surrounded a private crypt, but the fog had found me now. It hadn't just snuck up, but had come at me from all directions. "Violet!" I called out again, rushed in the headlong, but not before the cloudy mist finally trapped me. I threw my arms up instinctually to shield myself, but there was nothing I could do to fend off the air as it slithered up my body. Maybe it wasn't fog at all, but some sort of nerve gas that Missy's dick of a boyfriend had psychotically set off in the cemetery. The fog had subsided, leaving me standing there, still able to look around. I charged forward again, hoping that I'd at least make it to Violet before the effects took hold. I leapt the fence to find her on the other side. She was facing down on the ground, her head turned away from me. Before I could step forward to see if she was alive, the fog started to work its magic. My body went rigid, my knees buckled, and I began to seize violently only feet away from Violet's lifeless form. I clenched my teeth as I felt the fire inside me explode like the volcano that it had become. Red-hot embers ripped through my muscles and melted bone as I felt my body turn to ash from the inside out. The fancy gloves Henri had made me melted from my fingers and fused to the dirt on the ground around me. Tiny cracks in my forearms started to form, bubbling and blistering as the blood ran like molten rock in my veins. I couldn't take the pain, and I felt like I was going to bite my tongue off if I didn't scream and let some of it out. A growl erupted within me as I threw my hands to my face. It too burned like the charred flesh of my hands. My breathing was heavy as I struggled to keep myself conscious. One last searing jolt, like a million hot knives to the gut, and then it all stopped. My skin didn't hurt anymore. My hands didn't feel hot. I didn't feel hot either. Maybe Henri was wrong. Maybe the fog had been a good thing. It seemed as if it had cured everything that ailed me. I carefully peeled my body from the dirt path and pulled myself into a standing position. When my vision adjusted from the blinding agony I had just been in, I took a look at my hands, expecting to see flesh and bone. But it was worse. The charred skin and ember-filled veins had crept their way up to my arms, almost to the elbow. Every time I breathed out, sparks of orange popped from my mouth. I threw my hands up to my face, but they didn't burn the flesh there, because there wasn't any. Reptilian scales armored the sockets of my eyes and the skin of my forehead, the plates altering my vision somewhat. My hair was tangled in something, and when I reached up to fix the knot, I felt them. Horns. Hard spirals of keratin protruded from the crown of my head and curled back from my forehead. My only instinct was to roar into the air like some feral animal. What had I become? What had that fog done to me? Done to Violet and Missy? I could hear loud screams now, screams of agony and fear. I scooped Violet up in my arms, her body limp in my grip. She was practically dead weight, but she was breathing. I threw her over my shoulder and sprinted off towards the cemetery gates. It sounded like people were being slaughtered. Total chaos had broken out as Jeremy and Missy stood near the bar, watching as the people around them writhed in torment on the ground. They were dying. All of them were dying. Their bodies had swelled up and boils had formed on every exposed surface of their skin. Flesh was splitting and blood had begun to seep from orifices. I heard Violet stir in my arms. "Don't look," I whispered as I ducked behind some obelisks and cherubs until I came to the gates that still stood open. Jeremy's attention snapped in my direction as I slipped under a velvet rope blocking the front gate and began running towards the tree line into the dark. I hoped that Henri was still waiting for me. I effortlessly carried Violet down the dirt road for a quarter of a mile before I saw Henri's truck. The headlights flashed at me, and the engine roared to life. I picked up my pace and brought her right up to the passenger side where Nate sat. "What the fuck?" he screamed and flailed himself backward into Henri. I forgot that I didn't look like myself and felt sort of bad as I began to laugh at Nate's apparent panic brought on by my disfigurement. "You never listen to me, do you? I told you to steer clear of that fog." Henri slammed his fist down on the steering wheel. "Adam?" Nate's eyes were so large, I thought they were going to just pop out of his skull. "Yes, help me get Violet into the truck." I lowered my head through the window and Nate backed himself up again like a cornered cat.
"Help him, Nathaniel. Now is not the time to judge your friend."
Henri pinched the underside of Nate's arm and he jerked, unlocking the door to come out and assist me. "Is she alive?" Henri narrowed his eyes at me. "Yeah," I responded, holding her close against my chest. "Does she look as ugly as you?" Henri picked at me, knowing that I already felt bad enough as it was. "I haven't checked anything on her. It was dark and she was facing away from me," I spouted as Nate got into the bed of the truck and arranged some blankets and a tarp to set her down on. Henri climbed in the bed with him and held out his hand to take Violet as I passed her off. He laid her out on the blankets as I leapt up into the bed next to her. "Looks like her hair went white from fright." Violet's head lolled to the side as Henri went to remove the hair from her face and see what damage had been done. Her skin already had this weird dusty purple color to it, but when Henri moved the thick locks from her face, it surprised everyone.
"Jesus fuck, what the hell is going on?"
Nate needed to stop being so hilariously scared, but at least he was for good reason. Violet's eyes were closed, all except the third one that was planted in the middle of her forehead. The hair on her head was virgin white, as were her eyelashes and eyebrows. Her skin seemed to glow a faint lavender under the blanket of stars above.
Is she looking at us?"
Nate pointed at the beautiful indigo eye that sat in the middle of her forehead.
"No, she's still unconscious, but we need to get the hell out of here before that girl and her crazy-ass demonic boyfriend gets a hold of us."
Henri covered her with the blanket.
"But is she gonna be okay?"
I had been able to survive the ordeal and stay conscious, but her tiny body hadn't been able to withstand the pain. And the others? Why had we reacted differently than they had?
"You stay in the bed with her. Keep her warm until we get back to the city. Then we can start to figure out what the fuck happened to the both of you."
Henri jumped out of the bed of the truck, followed closely by Nate. I huddled Violet close to me and swaddled her in the wool blankets that had been provided. The engine of the truck roared loudly as Henri made a hasty U-turn in the dirt road and headed back to New Orleans. The stars streaked by in the sky as I leaned into the cab of the truck and wrapped Violet in my arms. I wasn't able to save her from this, even though she had warned me not to. I had become a casualty because I couldn't leave well enough alone. But something in the back of my head asked me if it was worth it. "Happy fucking birthday to us, Violet. What the fuck are we gonna do with these lives now?" That's it for tonight's episode and the end of issue number 2 of 667. I know that some of you may have been expecting the Bermuda Triangle, and I apologize that I couldn't get it done for this week, but it's up next. If you ever have any ideas for episodes, feel free to shoot me a message on the Occult Archives page on Facebook or Instagram. If you're really loving the content I'm putting out, consider subscribing to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, and leave me a rating and review on Apple Podcasts if you have access to it. Apple Podcasts is the leading platform for podcasts and can really help the occult archives, can't speak, Kit Scene, which helps me bring you more spooky content. You can also find me on Buy Me a Coffee at Occult Archives and support me there with tips or a monthly membership for only $3 a month. I'm working my way towards a nice USB audio interface so I can record future episodes with better audio quality and make recording easier on myself, which could mean more frequent content for you, my spooky friends. Now that I've tripped over my words like I usually do and rambled on, bored you all to death, let me just end this episode with a hip hip hooray that retrograde is over, because it's been hell on all of us, if you believe in that sort of stuff. I love you guys, and I will see you next episode. Until then, lock your doors, salt your windows, and remember, it's okay to sleep with the lights on.